Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. J.D. Bunkus. Ailish Forfar. Blake Murphy. And it's his aux cord. Because it's Friday! And things are actually open. You can do stuff. That's right. You can go places.
Going right to the bar after this.
Yeah, you are, eh?
You're Let's
recording,
go.
You're recording the A-list. You're recording the A-list for Instagram, and you're going right to bed. You're going to have a three-day hangover from Canada winning gold. There's no question about it. You have not gotten the sleep that you need. There is
no doubt.
Not a
hangover. Just keep chasing it, you know?
You just keep chasing it? Uh-huh. Yeah.
You never feel it. Yeah, you just keep going.
A-list, you're literally, like I said, the child who says that they're not sleepy and is going to fall asleep the second that the parent turns away from them, and you're going down hard. You're due for a 12-hour sleep. That's going to happen to you this weekend. No question about it.
Okay. I will accept. Yeah. I accept that that goal. I will achieve it. Thank you.
I've still been feeling the glow of Canada's gold medal win, so I know that you've been feeling the same way. And so, yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah, especially with, like, having more conversations with the girls now, like, that they've sobered up and that they want to chat. And I had a couple of my one friend's parents call me, just, like, wanted to talk about the situation. Like, it was just so cool. Mm-hmm. Just to talk, you know, yesterday was a fun day as well. It really happened, you know. It was really sinking in for them. So, yeah, I don't think that it won't ever be special, you know. It was really, really cool.
Well, you're due for the actual celebration too, right? Because
I already asked, when are you back?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like you're gonna have all these things bubble up into one thing with those women and with all the athletes really that were at Pyeongchang, which is the U.S. centralization. You were gone from people and society for God knows how long. Like, what was it before they even went, where it was
like
just
a
them
year
as a team?
Yeah. At least a year of that. Yeah. And then before that, you know, that's your main focus anyway. You don't do anything.
Yeah. So you're just locked into this thing for forever. And then you actually go out and you grab gold. And now you get to come home and things are opening up and you can actually go places. Yeah. Guess what? You're about to see the Canadian women's national hockey team at, like, Leafs games and the
they
events.
Better be.
Yes. They are going to be attached to those things. By the way,
hopefully they get a plus one, you know?
Yeah.
Bringing you guys.
First of all, Blake's not going with you ever again to a hockey game after the way you treated him in front of Marie-Philippe Poulin. There's no question about that. And two is rude saying that to us. Rude way to start today. So if you could go to a Toronto Maple Leafs game right now, you'd probably be feeling pretty good. Last night was awesome. There were fans back in the seats. There seemed to be an actual pretty great energy in the building. I don't know how much of that is people returning, me missing it, it being Sidney Crosby, which is a high event game in the city of Toronto. And this is a city of high event games. But the Leafs come through. They score early. The top line plays great. Jack Campbell plays great. The defense pairings play with more balance and purpose and effectiveness. So I'll just open up the floor this way, which is, what made you feel most confident about the Leafs after last night's win? Ailish.
Jack Campbell, baby. He's back. And I tried to put the good vibes into the atmosphere yesterday, saying, you know, the Leafs will have home ice advantage, they'll have fans back, you know, it's a big game for Jack. I think he's going to stand up and he's going to prove himself that he can play some consecutive games here. And he must have been listening to the show because he did just that. I thought it was just great to see some confidence, you know, early big saves, consistency. You got the soup chance back. I just missed the soup chance. You know, that's got to be something that we didn't even think about as a goaltender, as a team. You know, you can rally behind a big save that your goaltender has. And he had a couple of those early. And for them to be able to give him the praise that he needs, that's got to help. You know, I don't know the percentage that it gives you, but it gives you a little bit of extra energy. So to see Jack have probably his best start of this calendar year, 2022, I think, hey, if that's what we're going to start with the restrictions opening back up, people being able to be in the seats, like, that's exactly what you wanted from him. And I couldn't have been happier with this play. And just kind of like an about time, you know, and it was good that it happened.
I thought that the Leafs did a pretty good job keeping the volume of shots that Pittsburgh was putting on net lower, dangerish. But also you're playing against a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, where so many players on the ice are carrying a threat at any given time that there's not really, like, they have two lines of guys where there's not really low danger chances. That's just not a thing that the Penguins are. And I thought in the first period, especially, Jack standing in there and making some of the saves he did was a real steadying presence, right? Like, if you're the Leafs, this is okay. You're playing against a team that is roughly your caliber. You haven't had, you know, the best of stretches. Maybe there's some nerves. Your first game back with fans in the crowd and stuff. And if you get on your heels early, that game maybe plays out differently. The energy plays out differently. Even just something like, hey, you've got two new D pairings. Like, if one of them give up something easy early on. So I thought Jack standing in there the way he did in the first, especially, was a great tone setter and gave the Leafs a little bit of runway to settle in. And then just the pure volume here. Like, even if these were all low danger chances, which they weren't, there's no such thing as a light 45 save night. That's the third highest save total of Campbell's career and his highest as a Leaf. That is a lot of work. That's a lot of shots, no matter where they're coming from. It's a lot of shots from the three of us.
Yeah, I see. It's an interesting game because I actually think that that's the pretty obvious template for the Maple Leafs to win, right? Your star players come through. Your blue line is playing with confidence, and your goaltender plays up to snuff. And
your special teams are what swings the game.
Right. I think it's important. This is one of those perfect, hey, you point this game out as why you don't just use analytics. Because I never felt like the Leafs were the secondary team in that game, but I'm guessing if you looked at the analytics, they would tell you a story of, well, the Penguins just outshot them by this amount, and there were so many shots and the power plays and all this different stuff that it tilts the game in a certain way. I don't know. Maybe you tell me if I'm wrong, Blake, but I just...
Well, at 5-on-5, the Penguins had 54% shot share, so nothing crazy. They did have a higher share of high danger chances, but that kind of ignores that, like, only 46 minutes of this game were played at 5-on-5. So,
right.
Like, special teams is a real thing. Sometimes when we look at the analytics or we try to capture possession and things like that and how the ice is tilting, like, we're looking at 5-on-5 primarily. And I mentioned this the other day, and we could talk about it more later, too, is, like, the Leafs might be the best special teams team of all time right now. So, you almost can't even just, like, you can't just look at 5-on-5 stuff for the context here, because that's missing the biggest component, maybe, of the Leafs' success.
So I guess what I'm trying to say here is Jack was awesome. I tweeted after the first period, that's the best we've seen him look in a really long time. And I was even nervous to tweet that, knowing if he did perform poorly the rest of the way that I was going to get hit with, I can't believe you jinxed it. But no, but you can tell with a goalie that it's not just about saves, right? It's stylistically, Jack was quiet in the net last night. There weren't a ton of rebounds. He wasn't swimming in his net. He looked like old Jack Campbell. And Ailish, I think you're actually onto something with the soup chance that they were... You know, in the movies where someone doesn't remember who they are, and then there's one thing that happens and it kind of kicks them, remember, remember, and then something kicks in, they're back to themselves. It almost felt like the soup chants were that for Jack. Hey, remember, remember how you were an all-star. Remember how this fan base loves you. Remember how the producer of Real Kipper and Bourne, Sam McKee, was comparing you to Curtis Joseph in his prime with the Maple Leafs. Remember. And he did that. He was calm. He was poised. He was collected. Just everything about his game last night was flawless. I have zero nits to pick with Jack Campbell yesterday. He was great. So if we're talking about what was the most important thing from that game, I think that it was Jack Campbell. I think that you guys are right. Jack Campbell was the most important part. But if you're asking me what I feel most confident about, it's the thing we've been seeing for a little bit longer. I'll take the answer of... I guess it would be the special teams or the top line. Just the fact that the top line went out there and dominated the way that they did against Sidney Crosby's group, that they were fearlessly going head-to-head against those guys and looked not only as though they were the better of the two, winning face-offs, getting shots on net, getting high danger chances. It's that is, to me, such the tone setter for the postseason, right? Can your top line dominate every other top line in the NHL. Because the Crosby line is what it's going to be like when you get there. That's who you're going to have to win against. Top lines. Tough competition. Night in, night out. And that's been the problem for the past couple of years, is unless they do the super load up like they did in the Columbus series, Toronto's had trouble dominating with that those groups 5-on-5. And to do that against Sidney Crosby, that's not a Western Conference foe. That's not some other team. That's not the New Jersey Devils. You know, that's Sid. That's Sid in your building. A guy who, as I mentioned, coming into this game, had 63 points in 46 games against your franchise. So to do that last night, the way that they did it, to me was not a surprise, because those guys have played so well. I never doubted whether Matthews and Marner and Bunting are a very good line. I guess just the degree in which they played with confidence and just the end-to-end domination that group had, to me, that was it. And you can take all the other stars and you can add Morgan Riley to that and Jack Campbell to that if you wanted to make it a full picture. But that line specifically playing that way, boy, that's just making it harder and harder not to believe in this team.
I'm glad you mentioned the faceoffs too, because that's something Sid does, right? Like the strongest forearms in the league. He's dominant butt, in the circle. Forearms. Yeah. And Matthews went 8-3
goals
in the dot last night. And six of those, I don't have the exact breakdown against Crosby, but six of those 11 faceoffs were against Crosby's line.
Well, I think he was 6-0 against Sid.
Whew. That's something else. And that's like, look, Matt, and none of those faceoffs between Matthews and Sid were in Pittsburgh's end. So you're not only, four of them were neutral zone, two of them defensive zone. So you're taking possession from him too, right? Like that's, I know that they use that Crosby line dynamically in the same way the Leafs use their first line dynamically. And it's not exclusively an offensive zone line or anything like that. But yeah, you go toe to toe with Sidney Crosby in the dot, in neutral to defensive situations, and you're winning those things. Like it's a huge component. It's actually quietly one of the things the Leafs that's really tilted things for the Leafs this year, because Tavares, I think, is still second in the league in faceoff percentage too. They've been monsters when it comes to that. So that was cool to see, especially against Sid, because other than Bergeron, he's kind of the guy that I'm measuring your faceoff dot against, right? Mm-hmm.
So I used to try to do this. I usually tried to build this segment idea around the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it just sounds so good, and I love that movie, and that's the reason why I fell in love with Clint Eastwood, was that film. But it doesn't work because it's too negative, because you go, hey, what's the good? It doesn't sound all that great. It's like, it's just the good, and then there's the bad and the ugly, right? It's just, it's a tough segment to do on radio, but I think what we're sort of landing on here is, hey, what was the most important in terms of the Jack Campbell side of it, right? That was the most important thing for him to get right. What was the reason you have most confidence that this team can win is probably that top line just playing the way that they did. And then the next kind of category would be what made you feel the most optimism, or what made you feel the most surprise? And maybe that's what gets us into talking about Rasmus Sandin in the second pairing with Jake Muzzin. Jake Muzzin looked like a new man last night. Rasmus Sandin playing on his right side, something that a lot of people have been, I guess, not a lot of people, the Leafs have been reluctant to try. we're into February, where it's February 18th today, and this is the first time they're giving this a serious look, and it worked. And it worked against the Penguins. Obviously, the Leafs are going to go back to this, but should this actually be a thing? My God, it changes every puzzle piece that you have moving forward. It changes your deadline approach. It changes the way that you feel about this team going into the postseason. It felt like that is the number one story of the game, even though Jack played great, even though the top line played great. If that can be a thing, I don't know. I don't even know what to say.
I think it's an important thing on a couple different fronts. One, we've talked a lot this year about Rasmus Sandin playing well enough to deserve a look up the lineup, but what are you going to do on that side, right? Like, you're not, even if Jake Muzzin is struggling, you're not going to bump him down. And then obviously there's always questions about, can you change a guy's side? Can he be as effective? You look around at some of the trade targets we've kicked around with the Frank Saravalli or Justin Bourne or Kipper, whoever. It's a lot of, hey, here's someone you could plug in on the right side who's really underwhelming, or here's someone that might be more exciting, but you have to, like, something's got to give in terms of being overloaded on one side. If Sandin can stick like that, that opens up your trade possibilities too, right? Like, that allows you to address defense, period, rather than one specific spot on the depth chart. So I think that's important. I obviously, we want to see more than 12 minutes of 5-on-5 sample with those guys. But, I thought it was the best Muzzin looked in forever. I thought, you know, at least for the most part, our small concerns about Sandin in his own end were not that bad. Like, they had a pretty defensive-heavy deployment last night. Everyone did, because the Leafs spent more of the game in their own end. But, I don't think a lot of those concerns were there. So I think it opens up a lot of possibilities for you here. And, a month out from the trade deadline, I want to see that more, because if Sandin can kind of solve the second pair internally, you've got more options and more lower cost options. I know people don't like to hear that, but, like, realistically, opening up a situation where you're addressing 5-6 instead of 4 lets you do it a little cheaper, and then maybe you can get into, hey, maybe you can add a forward too, maybe it's 2 defensemen, whatever. So I think it's important in that regard. My one concern would be that I don't know how long I would have confidence in a Hall-Dermott pairing, or, you know, even if Liljegren comes back up at some point. So that would be the worry, I guess. And Hall and Dermott were fine last night. It's just...
Yeah. No, you know what, though? So a couple things off that. One is that I think Dermott and Hall are fine in sheltered, protected a couple minutes a game. I believe Justin Hall can be a team's 6th defenseman. I just don't think that he can be a top 4 guy right now after the sample that we've seen this season. That seems pretty clear, that he's been exposed as someone who isn't that guy. He's just not, you're not that guy. You're not a top 4 D on a Stanley Cup contender. And if you are, then you're trying to paper it over. And if you're a top 4 D, that means the depth underneath you is really going to struggle. I hate doing this, but it's just how I felt, so I'm going to say it. Timothy Liljegren not being in that game last night, I thought was a big part of it. I really do. I think that him not being in that game was a big component as to why they were able to keep Pittsburgh to those lower danger shots that you talked about, Blake. He's just, he struggles in that end of the ice. And having him not there and mixing up the pairings the way that they did, it worked. So to me, that's the group. That's the 6 guys that you're trotting out there until something changes. Has Liljegren been quality at times? Has he transformed himself into an NHL player? Yes. But on this team, he's been a bad fit. And I thought that worked a lot better. But also, if Sandin does solve your problem next to Muzzin, if those 2 guys look awesome, it gives you flexibility to potentially make multiple moves, right? You're not just doing one thing anymore. You're doing maybe 2 things. Maybe you are adding that forward. Maybe you are adding a defenseman. Maybe you're doing something else. Like, I'm very, very curious about what that does in terms of what Kyle Dubas can do with his all-in approach, blah, 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 to the deadline. Because as we've gone over many times, he's said it on record, they don't really have a ton of bullets. Also, they have a couple of areas to address. They don't have the flexibility, really, long-term-wise, to be giving up a ton of those assets. So I loved what we saw. I think it's the most important thing now over the next month is making sure that those guys play leverage minutes and those guys stay together.
It all comes down to showcasing, too. Like, if you have this much time, you can tinker with a couple things to see what works. Like, we're actually pretty fortunate that the trade deadline is as far away. I know it sucks for us because I want to see some action, but it's all about giving these guys opportunity to see what they have. And there's been so many injuries and so many things that have held that back from a full lineup, and to see how, you know, you can move a couple pieces around. So I think that's the biggest thing moving forward, for sure. The biggest storyline that I want to look at, other than if Jack Campbell had a blip last night in a really good game, or is he the same Jack Campbell from the start of the season, and the decor? We're confident enough in, you know, the offense that they're even getting, I think it was septuplet more David Kampf goals than he had last year. So you're already checking all the boxes with the guys that were supposed to be mid-level performers. You got Bunting on this electric streak. I think that we can lay off the forward examination now, of course, with how everyone's playing. So it just comes down to what the D can do. And if Jack Campbell has actually found his groove, stay tuned.
So, Blake, last thing on this game, to close out all the things, is the special teams. And you mentioned how good mm-hmm. they have been.
Yeah, so I mentioned this earlier in the week kind of as a throwaway. I think I had it teed up for something to chew on, and we just went somewhere else. So it was just a throwaway comment. But I made the claim that maybe this is the best special teams team, if not of all time, at least in modern history. So here's what we're looking at. This is one big number, but it's really a couple little numbers together. The Leafs at 31.8% on the power play are first in the NHL and 0.1% off the all-time power play record held by a 1970s Montreal Canadiens team. They're also the only team in the league to not allow a shorthanded goal yet. They rank sixth on the power play with an 84.4% kill rate, and they're second in the league with 7 shorthanded goals for. So right away, you're like, okay, they have the best power play, they have one of the best penalty kills, and that penalty, like when you look at shorthanded goals for and against, they're a +7 there. This is a monster. We have data at Natural Stat Trick going back to 2007 in terms of possession share in different situations. The Leafs have taken almost a quarter of the shot attempts this year when they're on the penalty kill, 22.7% of shot attempts. So we use that as a possession gauge, as a where's the puck on the ice gauge. 22.7% is by a significant margin the highest penalty kill Corsi percentage that we have going back to 2007. So at least in the last 15 years, no penalty kill has carried this much of a threat and got the puck in the other team's zone as much as this. The only comparable, I think, is the Canadian women's national team penalty kill against the U.S. the other night, where the U.S. is stuck in their own end, icing the puck a couple times a power play. This penalty kill, I mean, the power play is awesome. This penalty kill has been ridiculous.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to also bring up the other thing that made me feel confident from last night's game is Kampf and Mikheyev, and just how those two guys, they cover so much ice. They just do. They're everywhere. And it really is a new component to this Leafs team, is there is still that identity to the third line. We've had the machinations where you move Mikheyev up and we've tried to figure out where he's properly slotted. But when those three guys are together, you just feel like the other team's not going to score. The other team's not going to score when they're out there together.
So that line at 5-on-5, and obviously there was a ton of penalty kill, but this is the degree to which they have Sheldon Keefe's trust right now. Last night, 0 offensive zone shift starts, 8 defensive zone shift starts against the Crosby line. So they played almost 10 minutes of that game against the Crosby line, and all of it starting in their own end or at best neutral ice. And whatever the results, like, look, you're obviously in those situations against that line, you're going to have a negative shot share, even if they had allowed a goal, like whatever. I only bring those numbers up to highlight the level of trust that Sheldon Keefe has in that group, where no questions asked, you are the Crosby is in the offensive zone line, which is the biggest vote of confidence you can offer in hockey.
No, I really do think that they are one of the like last night, we haven't spoken about them in a while. And if, again, they're a group where we've tried a whole bunch of different things with. Mm-hmm. You tried Kasha up the lineup. Hey, does Kasha deserve more minutes? Hey, does Mikheyev deserve more minutes? What should they do with Mikheyev? Hey, does Kampf end up getting bumped down if you try to create a third line that's built around William Nylander? And last night was just sort of a reminder of, hey, you guys talk too much. You do a 4-hour show every day. Shut up. This is fine. This is actually one of the things we know is, should be a thing. To me now, we're closing in on what is the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs? What is a playoff team going to look like? Now you're building more certainties. And maybe this is a good way to get in the certainty'd read. Is you've got the certainty of the top line. Bunting, Matthews, Marner, that's not changing going into the postseason. And I think you have a certainty when it comes to the third line. That Kampf, Kasha, and Mikheyev, those three guys should absolutely be together. You have your top pairing set. Now you've got a month to continue to figure out, hey, do you need another piece on your second line more than you need another piece on the blue line? Or can you figure out a way to add something to the depth of the blue line and to the forward group and find a balance of the two? That's the next month. But those two things, they are absolutely set. With that, it's now time for Yep.
Road for the Podium, brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Guys, the Olympics are ending very rapidly. We've got about two more days of competition. So today and tomorrow, and then the closing ceremonies on Sunday. So Friday sports, we're starting to dwindle in terms of options. But last night while we were sleeping, we'll give some respect to the bronze medal winning curling team for Canada.
Obviously,
gold was the goal. A little bit of redemption beating the United States. No, you don't like it.
No. How am I supposed to like it? But curling is supposed to be an automatic double gold for us. You remember when we were younger and you went to the Olympics and we were doing the gold medal count and you went, well, and we also have two. Curling coming. So that's two. That's the expectation I have for curling. I'm sorry. That's never going to change. I don't care what the other countries do. So I've talked to curling people about this, right? Because I'm trying to find out what the hell is going on. And I've gotten back, well, other countries have started to pick up to Canada strategically, that they're borrowing from us strategically. Get out of here. You're telling me that other countries weren't looking at what Canada was doing at other Olympics? This is the first time that this has happened? Hell no. I hate it. I don't like it. There's nothing to be said about. Sure, fine. If you think Gushu and them are going back with the bronze, say, we put a lot of work in, we got this bronze. Hell no. I'm holding them to the standard that they hold themselves, which is gold or nothing. That's gold or bust at the Olympics when it comes to curling. So, yeah, figure it out. I don't know what the actual solution is, whether or not you're bringing the best players from each rink. I know that each position is specialized enough that you actually can't bring necessarily four skips, but potentially, the evaluation has to change. There is a problem with the fact that, I don't want to say problem, and I don't want to, you know, trash our own products here, but we do have these things like, you know, the World Championships of Curling or the World Series of Curling, and we have the Scotties and the Briars and these other tournaments that actually matter when it comes to this. So kind of tough to have all these and then say, well, then there's a selection committee or something that switches this up. I don't know how it works, but yeah, that's a disappointing result. That's the only time they will reevaluate. Yeah, maybe they do. I don't know. I'm curious to see what people in the curling community are going to be talking about for the next month after this bronze.
Okay, so that already happened. If you're listening live right now, you can turn on the pairs figure skating short program. Two Canadian teams in the final right now. One's already gone. They're sitting in third. So we have another pair a little bit later in the standings. I think there's about six more teams to go. So if you're listening live, you can tune into that. Then it kind of gets a little quiet throughout the day. If you want to watch men's semifinal action in hockey, which we're not in, I don't know if that interests you anymore or if you're totally toned out. Okay. So ROC and Sweden are playing.
Triggered.
Yeah. Okay. Nope. Don't watch the hockey. So what you can watch that you might be interested in, freestyle skiing men's half pipe final. Three Canadians in the running. That's tonight. So 8:30 p.m.
Yeah,
perfect prime time viewing of an actual medal opportunity with three Canadians in the final. And yeah, it gets a little bit slim after that. Tomorrow, I'll give you some Saturday viewing. Men's hockey gold medal game, 11 p.m. Would have been a great night to go out to the bar to watch Canada in the gold. Probably won't be partaking in that now. But if you're a lover of hockey, you want to see, you know, Slovakia with their underdog story, could be an opportunity. And then the closing ceremonies Sunday at 7 a.m. I know that the women's hockey team has been told that they're staying for that. They want to have some gold medalists walk out, potentially a flag bearer. I'm very interested to see how they choose that. Does Poulin get the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies?
Well, wasn't Hamlet the opening ceremonies with Poulin?
Yes.
Well, that just do the same thing. Just do the open
and close.
That'd
be pretty cool.
Because Hamlet came through, his career is closed, and he dominates again. He I think that that's actually the easiest thing to do, is give the two gold medalists, the two people with the high expectations, the high level pressure, that are potentially closing out their careers, but Hamlet more with certainty than Poulin. But yeah, that to me is an easy choice, unless you really want to highlight somebody else, which is fine too. But I would
maybe
give Sarah
Nurse.
Maybe. She'd be very deserving. I just think that there's some nice symmetry or story closing elements to having those two walk down again together to say, hey, like, we showed up here with a mission and we left with mission accomplished.
So yeah, it's Sunday morning at 7 a.m. you can watch that. But other than that, the opportunity to see Canada win some medals today really rides on the 8:30 p.m. men's halfpipe freestyle skiing with three Canadians in the running. And then that's it. That's it for another 2 years, another 4 years. Maybe we'll be still doing the Road to the Podium, brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way.
Coming up, an A-list that doesn't involve props.
No props. Just great stories.
Just pure
great storytelling.
That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. Do all those nice things. JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. It's Friday.
Oh, yeah.
It's Friday. Blake's on the aux cord. Blake, is there a theme today?
I hope so, because it's really good so far.
There is not a theme.
Oh,
just some songs. I always try to put a song that relates to at least a little bit to the segment or to what we're going to be talking about. I don't know. I assume
your
that
there friends over the A-list.
Well, I just assumed there was going to be a lot of talk about her friends in the A-list.
We
might have a guest at 7:30 from Long Beach, so we're coming in with Vince Staples to just like give you a little spoiler later. So, I always try to do
that.
So
there is a theme.
Well, it's not a theme. I just try to fit the songs to the segment.
Yeah. Again, if you want to get Blake's aux cord, because you're listening to this on podcast right now, and we are trying. We're doing our very best to limit our discussions about music off the breaks that you don't hear, because you hear some generic rock band that goes like, doom, boom, doom, 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 doom. That's what it sounds like. And you're like, who picks these terrible songs? Well, we're not allowed to play the songs on Spotify. So you're listening to this on podcast. You're going, I'd like to hear what songs Blake has. Mm-hmm. He has a Spotify. You search him on Spotify. It's there. The Fan Morning Show has a playlist that I will share later today on my socials. Make sure that you subscribe to it, you follow it, you do all those fancy pants things. I actually like Blake does the actual creates a Spotify playlist and shares them to the public. I've taken a gander. Oh yeah, I've taken a peek. I've done
many
a little
for
borrow.
Different moods. Depends on the mood you're in. He has it all.
Most of them are the same mood.
Yeah, most of them are the same mood.
Yeah, it's the only mood I have.
Yeah. So, anyways, that probably brings us to the mood of the show, the A-list.
Let's do it.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, a couple wide ranges of variety in the A-list, just from heartwarming to
heartwarming.
A bit explicit. Let's start with the heartwarming one.
No, get the trash.
Get the good one out of the way.
The
one that you're gonna be like, cool. Okay, so when the Canadian women's hockey team was on the air playing, Google saw searches for girls hockey school, girls hockey skates skyrocketing across the country, which is a really nice sign that families and children were interested in partaking in women's hockey. It's an inspiring piece of data that, hey, if you see it, you can be it. And that's kind of the whole, conversation that we've had as female athletes that, look, we're on the biggest stage here at the Olympics every 4 years. And, maybe hundreds or thousands or even more of families and kids saw it and thought, wow, I want to put my kid in hockey. So just a small little tidbit, a little fact for your morning that, look at that, go girls. And it was very inspiring to many.
So we have pretty much study after study now that the sell for trying to get places to invest in Olympic Games of, well, it will grow sport, is BS. Mm-hmm. That it's actually, when we build a velodrome here for the, what was that games we had in Toronto?
Pan Am.
We had Pan Am. Hey, guess what? We're not a silly city full of velodromers now, you know? Like, we're not popping off with the velodrome. It's not, you know, you and your friends going down to the velodrome on a Saturday night to go spin the wheels. However, there is no doubt in my mind, and I don't care how many studies you ever show me of the Olympics not having impact on things, will stop me from thinking that moments like that, especially for women's sports, are of incredible importance. Yes, can they inspire individuals? Like, don't get mad at me right now if you say that you were inspired by Charles Hamelin. Like, yes, of course, I believe that some people are. I don't think that it's en masse. But for women especially, representation does not happen through professional sports the same way it happens for men. That's just a fact. Like, I got to grow up watching the NBA. And yeah, I probably shouldn't have related to Michael Jordan and believed that I could be an NBA player someday when I was younger. That might have been a little foolish. I probably shouldn't have thought, hey, we're both humans in the same category of human. No, it wasn't true. It didn't turn out that way. But I had it, right? I was able to grow up and have different stars and different people I could be aspiring to. With women's hockey, Olympic basketball, whatever you want to put it to, with women's sports, I still believe that there is just a different element of import. So I'm not surprised to hear that. And
yeah,
it's awesome.
The representation element, like, yeah, maybe you shot higher with Michael Jordan, but you're a Sonics guy. Yeah. For me, it was more like, oh, Nick Collison. That looks like someone stretched me out. Or
yeah,
Aaron
Kraft. I was
going to
say, you're half the size of Nick Collison.
Yeah.
He's 6'10". So it's like...
Yeah, and I'm 3'5", apparently.
Yeah.
No, but I do think that representation matters. And it's not even... Like, it's not even we just assume. It's like... Yeah. Like, we had... I think you guys were on the DMs, but we had a couple people reach out yesterday about... you know, watching with their kids or their daughters and them being excited by that. And I have friends with like, I'm of the age now where I have friends who their kids are starting to get into sports and you know, shooting them my WNBA league pass login matters or that women's soccer team in the summer matters. And I think especially of Sarah Nurse, where she's the first black woman to win a gold medal in hockey. And, you know, she's been so prominent in the marketing around it and the lead up and there's the Barbie and everything. I think it's huge. I think there is absolutely a momentum factor as we try to come out of the pandemic here. And, you know, we've talked to professors on this show about how much the last 2 years have limited youth participation in sport and youth physical activity in general. And I think, you know, the timing, it's never bad timing to win a soccer gold medal and a hockey gold medal in a couple months apart. But the timing, especially right now, as we hopefully return to some semblance of normal and want kids to be inspired by and getting back into sport, it's awesome.
I think, though, there's a huge difference, Blake, between leagues like the WNBA and the Olympics in this regard, though, just because...
Oh, I was just using
level...
it as a personal
no, I know,
example
but just,
of like...
Yeah, but just like the level of celebration for these Olympic Games is so important, right? Because I got to imagine, Ailish, you probably speak to this better, but it's like having everyone excited about something and not just a small niche group has to have just a tremendous impact. I would think anyways, if you are a little girl who wants to get into something, like seeing your dad or your brother screaming for a women's Olympic sport, you're not getting your dad and your brother to watch the Seattle Storm play a basketball game. Like, you're just not doing it, but you are getting them to watch this.
Yeah. It's increasingly special. And we live in the social media age as, you know, grown up, so we get to see how much it impacts, you know, people that we never see tweet about women's sports or people that, you know, maybe cover this sport, to have extra eyes on it is just awesome. So I'm so glad that I saw that study. Keep it coming, as always. If there's ever, like, and I used to coach before the pandemic, you know, youth teams in Toronto, and so I look forward to getting back to that because I miss being able to help inspire that generation of young girls, young boys that want to keep going. So I'm feeling positive about where we're going with restrictions being lifted and hopefully people can get back on the ice and get training. So
honestly, I really do hope that. I think all three of us have had, obviously all three of us have had our lives shaped by sports, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here. We all know that. And this is something that, this is the thing that drives me nuts when people try to go, hey, are you a sports bro? Or, hey, oh, sports are me. Yeah, I don't think that the individual games are of that much significance. Like, if you're the person that's
everything else you learn, too.
Yeah, of course. It's just, it's this stuff. This is the thing. These are the connections, the physical activity, the being inspired to do something that is greater than yourself. That's the kind of stuff that, yes, I really, really hope we need. And I hope that we end up seeing participation numbers over the next year skyrocket, you know, that people do remember that that this is really, really important, that these things are really, really important. Play is important. Activity is important. Representation.
And you don't need to be an Olympian for that. Like, I think
sometimes
it's tough where you're like, well, I'm not like, you know, girls that might be in high school that are realizing that they're not going to go D1 or they're not going to be able to get a scholarship for university and represent the national team. There's still so much that you've gained as an athlete throughout, you know, 5 or 6 years of being on a sports team, leadership, dedication, you know, setting goals for yourself. There's so much that you learn, and maybe it's not that you're going to make the Olympic team, but you're a better person. So yes, go, go find ways to be involved in your community, get your kids in the game. And even if you're like my age and you miss playing sports, like,
yeah.
There's something out there for you. So very
I hate
happy
you
about
said,
that.
Even if you're my age, when you're almost a decade younger than Blake and I went like, shut up. Next item, please.
Okay,
next item
is literally the most opposite.
Even if
type
you're my
story.
Age.
The most opposite story. Okay, so earlier this week, we were sourcing Valentine's Day stories from all of you. Got some juicy ones, got some heartbreaking ones. And this has just popped out now, a couple days past Valentine's Day, but I had to surface it for our show. Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, I love this.
We know him. We know him well.
Oh, boy. This guy went full sitcom on us.
So, allegedly. So, everyone listening.
Allegedly.
This is allegedly. All right? Allegedly. Don't hold me to it. Had two women in the same hotel room. Different rooms on Valentine's Day. Somehow he pulled out the scam of the century where he had
phrasing.
He pulled out where he had two individuals at the same hotel on Valentine's night. And there's been some heavy research into this because you don't make a claim like that on social media unless you have the facts to back it up. And there are the images from very similar hotels, the tags to Stephon Diggs. The two girls have already been, you know, linked to him in the past. It seems pretty accurate in terms of my research that he did this.
Okay. But Blake just actually summarized it best. Stephon Diggs just did a sitcom idea. He had two different girls on Valentine's, not together, but in two different rooms. I got to tell you, if it actually is what our brains think it is, which is the Blake sitcom thing, that's one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard.
He went full Zach Morris.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't know who that is.
Saved by the Bell?
Saved by the Bell, yeah.
This is
amazing. This is so great. I just love picturing him going room to room.
Like, what do you say? Oh, hon, I got a call. Like,
well, that's it.
You
that's
zip out for an
see.
Hour? Like, I just want to know the logistics behind it. That's why I brought it up to see if you guys had any. How would you make this work?
Oh, well, my first thought on this was simply
I would not.
It's rare that you would tell me that there's a story of two women in a hotel room and the sex is the least interesting part. You know, like I'm the least interested in
the
sex.
The strategy.
It's the strategy and the logistics, because this guy, this is an all-time move. This is an all-time move. This is something guys are going to reference for the rest of their lives. If this turns out to be true, if this gets a bit of an expose, if he talks about this in any way, this is just becomes a thing of legend.
Ailish, we tried to explain to you what the idea of a roster a couple weeks ago.
I know what this a roster is.
This is like
it wasn't me.
Kyle Dubas, Brandon Pridham levels of managing around the cap. Like, you're claiming Adam Brooks, you're sending low, you're going down, you're waving Adam Brooks. Nobody really understands what's happening. Stephon Diggs has got. Wallet full of hotel room cards. There's also like, I get to grab it. There's something known as a refractory period. I'm curious how that all plays out if you're doing
drugs are involved.
Yeah.
Whew. But yeah.
Are you accusing him of performance enhancing in this situation?
So when you look at you cross examine the photos from both of these females.
Yeah, which you have clearly done, by the
which
way.
Which I have done.
Yeah. Old
I am zooming in. FBI-ish. I am using IP addresses. Yeah, this seems very legitimate. One girl got better room and better flowers than the other girl. So there's clearly a preference to girl number one who gets, you know, the upgraded package. Girl number two might have been a last minute decision, might have been less effort put into it. I just something to chew on while you think about your Valentine's Day next year.
Here's my guess. This is just a guess. The girls knew that this wasn't some him going room to room. Oh, out of breath, you know, sitcom-wise, slamming the door. Don't go out there. That this was a part of the plan. That, hey, you... Oh, this is just the part of celebrity lives that I love, actually, because I don't want celebrities and athletes to live like us. You know, I want them to have something to aspire to. I want to believe something greater is out there, that you have the pull to tell these two women on Valentine's Day, this is your room, this is your room. How I spend my time is... none of your concern. I'll be around. You know, I'm mingling. I love it. I think this is an incredible story. It's my favorite story of Valentine's Day. In some ways, it's the most romantic of them all. You know, he has room, so much room in his heart that one woman is not enough.
That he just couldn't just, you know, pick one.
Stephon Diggs celebrates women. He celebrates women, multiple women.
Way to go, Stephon Diggs.
Buffalo Bills. Come on.
Hey, if you need another reason to cheer for the Bills, there. That
oh,
could
I
be
thought
one.
You were going to be like, if you need a third person to be involved in the Valentine's.
Okay. The big what if is no longer what if the Bills made the Super Bowl and what they would have done in that situation. Oh. It's what if the Bills made the Super Bowl and we had to have the Stephon Diggs prop over under receiving yards. Total in place of Tyler Boyd.
Maybe next year.
Stephon Diggs, receiver and giver. So what's next?
Oh, God. Sticking on the football theme, I don't know
if
you guys have...
Is that football, what we just did?
Yeah, he's a football player. You know what happened with Matt Stafford and the situation.
Explain.
Yes. So at the Super Bowl party or the Super Bowl parade, there's this viral moment of Matt Stafford standing on the stage and a photographer falls off the stage backwards and he just looks at her and walks away. And like clearly she's quite injured. And he got really, really scrutinized for that type of move. He's clearly drunk, but you know, you're Matt Stafford, somebody, a young female photographer falls on her back. Ends up that she broke her spine or fractured
tweeted,
her spine.
Unfortunately, I fractured my spine.
She's being like, we can kind of giggle at it because she's being, you know, she's laughing about it. I'm not making fun of her for breaking her spine. So she actually breaks her spine falling off the stage. And now Matthew and Kelly Stafford announced that they're going to cover all her medical expenses and help her with, you know, her recovery. But she truly broke her spine falling off the stage. Like there's a photo of her in the hospital.
So I don't know how you guys feel about this, but to me, this is internet outrage goes insane. I'm sorry that this young woman fell off the stage and hurt her back. And yeah, obviously, but Matt Stafford didn't push her off the stage and people acted like he did. He's bombed at a Super Bowl parade. Yeah, okay. In an ideal situation, and not even an ideal, does the average person, I think, go, oh my God, are you okay?
Right. Yeah. Like, let me get you some help.
Sure, this guy is obliterated. Did you see his speech from an hour before?
Yeah,
he can barely speak. He's going, let me bring you some Southern hospitality. I love LA. He can barely stand up. His wife is right there. We've all been in a situation where something happens and you're so drunk you go, no, I can't. This is too much for me right now. That's clearly what happened to him. And so the internet just bombing Matthew Stafford as though he's some kind of a monster because he turned away from someone falling off the stage, which would be shocking to see, right? You're drunk at a Super Bowl party. All of a sudden a human being disappears off of a stage. His wife goes over. She checks. Everybody's fine. This woman's going to be fine. But the idea, it's a nice gesture that they're paying for her medical expenses. Great. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, he has to do this because there had to be some gesture because he's getting killed by the internet. And people now say Matthew Stafford's a bad guy. I just think that that stuff is so unbelievably over the top. It's unfortunate. It's not the best look for him. I think he would acknowledge that. Everyone acknowledges that. But the idea that this is some kind of an indictment of his character is absolutely insane. Insane.
My only question from all that is, does Matt Stafford actually sound like that? Because I thought he was like a Florida guy.
No, he's Georgia.
Oh.
I thought. Well, he went to school in Georgia. I don't know. I just, when he said Southern hospitality, I assumed that that's where it was.
Okay, and here's a quick text.
I guess Florida is south.
Yeah.
It's true.
Florida's south.
A text on the text line before we take a break. I picture the Stephon Diggs situation happening like the dinner scene in Mrs. Doubtfire. Diggs was switching home and away jerseys while traveling between rooms.
Yeah, I like that. See, that's a good tweet. Or a text. Yeah, that's a good text. Thank
Keep
you
them coming. 590-590. You want to weigh in on the situation? Has that ever happened to you? Wow. If it has, you are one
a
gutsy
liar?
Man or a woman. Yeah. You are a liar. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of the world.